This is Cashing Out with your host, Dustin Sweetelson, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Yeah, buddy, back at it on Cashing Out. I'm Dustin Sweetelson, hanging out with you all night long from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. Final score in the Monday night football game in the college ranks, 27-24. SMU gets the win on the road in Tallahassee. They don't cover the 3, though. You could have had 2.5 if you laid it with them earlier in the week. We go under the total of 55. We cash on the money line, minus 140, with the Mustangs in the final game of week 1 of the college football season. We now shift gears, put our focus on to NFL week 1, because at this point, it just feels like we're hours away. We've got Wednesday football, Thursday football, and the full slate on Sunday. Plus, we're going to talk a little Major League Baseball with our next guest. He's Eric Lindquist. Check him out, stochastic.com, at Eric Lindquist on X, and he joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. Appreciate you doing this, buddy, as always, and you're as sharp as they come. Player props, sides, totals. So I love getting your perspective as we get into week 1. A lot of these numbers have been up, but they're very much playable. And I know you have a big opinion on the Thursday night game in Australia. Niners and the Rams, LA's laying 3.5, totals 48.5. How do you want to attack this game down under?
Well, nothing like shorting Christian McCaffrey, like RB1, no doubt about, whenever healthy. I mean, this guy is one of the perennial pass catchers in the history of football. I mean, the best pass catching running back that we've ever seen at the NFL level. But the more that I look into this game, obviously the traveling aside, everything else that you've been hearing from every talking head across the board, what are we doing with Christian McCaffrey as far as some of these rushing yards props, receiving props? I got to imagine that the 49ers, with no Ricky Pearsall, with George Kittle potentially limited, they would like to give Christian McCaffrey more usage, but how do you give him more than over 350 touches last season? He's had historic usage. That is why he's been, you know, your RB1 in fantasy football for however many seasons in his NFL career. But this is a historic Rams defense that we're going to see on the other side. And it's not just the edge rushing that you're going to get with the tandem there. Myles Garrett seems pretty good at football. Now you're pairing him back with Aaron Donald. And it just feels like the Rams are going to have a lot to say about the way that the NFL has played out this entire season. They have the most ridiculous roster known to man. I'm looking at 3.5, laying it here on the Rams side, potentially. Also get familiar with those half points. I mean, the 3.5 to 3 isn't as valuable as the 3 to 2.5. And you can do a lot of your DeVig Dodds and figure some stuff out that way. But the McCaffrey rushing yards, McCaffrey receiving yards, you've got to think that the 49ers, it's a long NFL season. This is a game that is going to be very, very tough to win. Potentially, you know, maybe some fluky stuff can happen with the travel, but I want to be shorting McCaffrey early and often before the potentially gets unchained there in the middle of that season.
Eric Lindquist is our guest, stochastic analyst at Eric Lindquist. You can find him on X, and he loves CMC unders in week number 1. What do you make of New Orleans going to Motown, taking on the Lions? Because one of the first bets I fired was New Orleans plus the 7 here. I think that they can hang around. But from a player prop perspective, Tyler Shuck stands out to you. What are you doing with him in this matchup with the Lions?
Yeah, I'm a huge proponent of the Saints this entire season. I'm on over 7.5 wins, over 8.5 wins, them to win the NFC South, them as a dark horse to potentially get to that NFC Championship game. But all of that aside, they have a really tough beginning of this schedule at Detroit, at Baltimore, and then they have the easiest schedule remaining in the entire NFL. For this particular spot, I think it's best to slice off either that Saints plus 7 like you are in just a more liquid market, or go my direction here. Tyler Shuck sitting at 21.5 receiving yards, or sorry, 21.5 completions as I'm looking at it, minus 115. And I just don't see any resistance in this Detroit secondary. There's none. There was none last year. There's not going to be any of it this season. Every draft pick that they've tried to stock that cornerback position with over the last few years has not panned out in any way, shape, or form. This is going to be a track meet. Jared Goff is breaking my model in terms of passing yards as well. It's actually more efficient now where it's sitting at. Keep in mind, these lines have been out for a long, long time. So we're trying to find very off-the-board type things, things that aren't being accounted for with massive liquidity, either at prediction markets, at sports books. So for me, I look at a guy in Tyler Shuck who had a great run at the end of last season, given it was a very, very easy schedule. That does not go over my head for those 4 consecutive wins that he put together. But this Kellen Moore offense in a second season there in New Orleans, pairing it with Chris Olave, who was a big breakout, got paid in the offseason going forward here. Wish Jordan Tyson was out there to kind of see what he could do out of Arizona State. We're going to be waiting on the hamstring injury for a while, but Devon Vele has been pretty nice in some of these type of situations at the tail end of last season as well, in limited time in Denver, but somebody that I'm actually pretty interested in his receiving yard totals as well. But I'm just looking and stripping off everything that has to do with Tyler Shuck completing passes against this horrid Detroit secondary.
I love that. It's a great angle there. Shuck looking for him to compete early on. You like the completions for him in week one against the Lions. How about the battle of Robert Saleh? The Jets going to Tennessee, taking on the Titans. Tennessee's a 1.5-point favorite. 39.5 is your total for week one. What do you want to do in this game?
So Cam Ward is not a running quarterback. He is not. He's just not. But sometimes you get these markets with really low rushing yard totals, and you got to do a lot of the math on the back end, and that's kind of my job. But overall, Brian Daboll is somebody who is going to have his quarterback with some type of mobility. He's going to force Cam Ward in some way, shape, or form as the offensive coordinator now there in Tennessee to have him spark a little bit of something in the running game. I don't expect Jackson Dart by any means, but there's something to Brian Daboll where that has to be a mainstay of this offense. Plus, we saw Carnell Tate just play horrible football in the preseason. I don't read a ton into that. I'm not a Tate guy as is, considering he didn't really have a great receiving profile as the number two there in Ohio State. And I'm feeling pretty confident right now with Cam Ward over 7.5 rushing yards being my favorite prop from week one that's still available on the board.
Eric Lindquist is our guest, stochastic analyst at Eric Lindquist. You can find him over on X. How about Major League Baseball coming up here for Tuesday? Really fun pitching matchup with Philadelphia taking on Houston. Andrew Painter, the young kid, feels like he's finding his form a bit as the season goes along. Hayden Wesneski on the other side. Right now, Philly -150, +124 with Houston. 8.5 is the total. You like a few things in this game, huh?
I mean, it's an interesting pitching matchup if you're sickos like us, I suppose. Yeah. But Andrew Painter, Hayden Wesneski. Wesneski cast off of the Cubs. I'm sure Cubs fans wouldn't mind having that arm in the stable right now. 3.63 expected slugging, right around a 21% K rate. Obviously, this is a very difficult spot where lefty power can be accentuated at Citizens Bank. But I want to highlight Andrew Painter here. And I do feel like the big renaissance for him is figuring out the fastball. His off-speed run values have been really good this entire season. In fact, his stuff plus across the board in his last month, 122 on the slider, 114 on the curveball. That's basically just them identifying the nastiness, the stuff of what a pitch can be based on vertical movement, velocity. And the off-speed stuff hasn't even been a problem when he was struggling. His ERA sitting north of 5.5, but sits around a 4.5 expected ERA. And that is highlighted by the ascension of this fastball. This was a terrible pitch. One of my worst pitches in all of baseball, has a negative 11 run value attached to it on Baseball Savant. And then you look at this stuff over the last month, 106 stuff plus on the fastball. That's why the results are coming by, because he's throwing that pitch over 32% of the time. And this is a Houston Astros offense that's going to put out Lamont Wade Jr., that's going to put out Taylor Trammell. These are glorified platoon guys who are not very good at just taking advantage of anything besides a fastball that's just low-hanging fruit. And you set up that fastball getting into that off-speed offering here for Andrew Painter. I love his over 4.5 strikeouts in this spot. I'm on the Philly side as well here at -140. I'm looking at this under as well. I don't think this is me going out of my way to go pick on Wesneski as much, but I really do believe in the stuff. If this was a call-up that showed up a month ago and you just didn't look at his early season results, we'd be talking about him being one of the best young pitchers in baseball. He's got that kind of raw stuff. You want to back it as these kids figure it out.
I love it. That's great stuff there from Eric Lindquist, stochastic analyst at Eric Lindquist on X. Guardians and Orioles. Tanner Bibee on the road, usually a fade spot for him traditionally in the past. Brandon Young, I got to tell you, I used to go against this guy all the time. I lost a lot of money early in the season. You're great with the numbers, though. I feel like you're going to tell me that some of that is smoke and mirrors. You like a lot of runs in this game. Total's 8.5. We're going to go over or under?
Yeah, it's kind of the he can't keep getting away with it, Jesse Pinkman situation on the Brandon Young side of it. I mean, this guy has a 92.9% strand rate over the last month. That being left on base percentage, he is getting so unbelievably lucky. 5.99 FIP sitting next to a 3.38 ERA. When you get these kind of discrepancies, the people who are paying attention to the actual results, again, we are in an age where you got to be a little bit sharper and find some of your edges just by getting into the nitty gritty with it. And for me, the results don't mean anything on the Brandon Young side of it. As for Tanner Bibee, kind of been a pinata, sub 18% K rate over his last month since the All-Star break. We're looking at, you know, walks galore, north of 10% now in that department over the last month, 5.15 Sierra. Everything is coming up not roses on the Tanner Bibee side. So square peg, square hole for me. I think both of these offenses more than capable of getting after each other in Baltimore. And you always got to be paying attention to weather this time of year. We're going to get a 100-degree game in Kansas City. It hasn't been nearly that here on the Baltimore side of things, but still 83 degrees, 50% humidity, advantageous ballpark. Both of these guys giving up lefty power, which is kind of the calling card when you go into Camden Yards. So for me, a very straightforward play on the over.
Eric also likes Carter Jensen for Kansas City to go deep at a little bit over 5-1. Real quick, 20 seconds. What stands out there?
Carter Jensen hits it high, far, and with loft. These are all good things. And Corbin Burns on the other side. The real thing here is Arizona's bullpen. They've got Brandon Garcia, who's just been a ridiculous lefty, one of their only lefties. They have some long reliever kid that's going to pitch tops two innings, if he possibly can, who's a lefty there. But otherwise, all righties. Nine righties sitting in that pen for the Arizona side. Very straightforward that you get the platoon for a guy like Carter Jensen, who they would otherwise bury against a lefty at times. You gotta take over plus 500 every time in Kauffman. 100 degrees. Have fun.
He's Eric Lindquist. Check him out on X at Eric Lindquist. Appreciate the time, buddy. Good luck with all.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on Cashing Out, I'm Dustin Sweetelson. You're listening to VSiN, the sports betting network. In case you missed it, SMU with the win on the road in Tallahassee to close out week one of the college football season. 27-24, your final score. Goes under any number that was out there on the total. SMU pushes, though, as they were laying 3 at close. We went moneyline minus 140, which, I got to tell you, man, that was an unnecessary sweat where they were the better team, but they turned the ball over, made a ton of mistakes, penalties, big time just not being ready to pull away from Florida State every time there was an opportunity. They let the Noles get back in. Fortunate for them, Florida State's just not good enough to take advantage of those mistakes. SMU gets the win. They do not cover, and we advance to week two of the college football season. Before we fully get there, though, we look back on everything that went down on Saturday and beyond, and we do that with the Campus Crawl here, our now staple, breaking down college football every day on Cashing Out. We begin with one of the biggest controversies you're ever going to see to start a season, and that is the Hail Mary that won it for Michigan against Western Michigan late on Saturday night. So in case you missed it, Michigan took a shot at the end zone. And ultimately, it's reviewed and stated that on the ball being touched by a receiver, he was out of bounds, which means there should have been one more second left on the clock, which gives Michigan at home an opportunity to have one more crack at it on a Hail Mary attempt.
Let's see.
You had Michigan in the game at minus 5,000 on the money line. Western Michigan was 22-1. There are people I saw with tickets on the Broncos to win this thing outright that were sweating this out. And replay officials for the Big Ten start going through the scenario saying, hang on, the clock on the field is the correct clock. And that is the official Big Ten clock. Explaining to us that it doesn't match the clock we're seeing on our television to, in the year of our Lord 2026, I say, what? This whole time I've been led to believe the clock on the TV is the correct one. Why would it not be the correct one? How can we not have it all synced up together so that everything is 100% accurate? This whole thing feels fishy from the jump. Because it feels like we're being deceived. We're being told information that we are not able to see in real time. It could be true, everything the Big Ten's saying, but how long it took them to release a statement to defend themselves and have an explanation, putting it through their media outlets that they control with the contracts of their broadcast deals, everything just smells fishy. It feels like this is what the CIA would be releasing in statements the night that JFK was assassinated, if Twitter existed on that night back in the 60s. Everything about this is odd. Everything about it doesn't make sense. And I don't understand, how is the clock different? Like, why is it different? How does this happen right now? And I think everyone should go forward assuming that this is a loss for Michigan. I know it's a win on the schedule. I know it's a win where they had the second chance for the Hail Mary and they ultimately get it. But I think this is a loss. And I think if they were a fringe college football playoff team, but based on the way they played, I don't think we have to worry about that scenario. I think this is where the human element should come into play. And the human beings on that committee should say, hold on. They controversially got past Western Michigan. We shouldn't give them credit. And conversely, if Western Michigan was to win the MAC this year, and they were up to be that group of six team to make the college football playoff, I think that committee should be giving them credit, almost treating this like it's a win for them as a feather in the cap, because in fairness, had the officials not gotten involved and taken this win away from them, they would have most likely the best group of six win over a Power Four team, and that should put them in the playoff conversation. We'll find out how that looks later. Western Michigan's got to take care of other business down the road. But let's hear from Kyle Whittingham, the head coach, or let's hear from, sorry, the Western Michigan president first. His name is Russ Kavulana, and here's what he said about the situation.
It was late night, wasn't it? I'll take that because I've talked to the commissioner, and he was gracious enough to let me talk to some of his staff who are over this issue. And it is just a discrepancy. I would just say that what the viewing public see and what the reviewing officials see are different. And that's clear. I will say I've looked into this pretty closely, and I used to be a federal prosecutor. I don't discern anything unfair or untoward in this process. Can the process be improved by having what the viewing public see as the same as what the reviewing officials see? Maybe. Frankly, that's not for me to decide. I will say, though, that this provides an opportunity because we're an education institution. And the truth is, every single one of us has encountered something like this in our lives. And some of us have been lucky to have it happen where it didn't hurt this bad. But these young men are encountering this in the most public and heart-wrenching way.
Russ, have a little pride, bro. Twisting it at the top and tickling it from underneath. Like, what are we doing, dude? Like, dial it back. I understand the Big Ten pays your bills and pays you to come to town so they can beat that booty a couple times a year. But come on, dude. Defend your school. Defend those players. Like, what are we doing here? If you don't have a little bit of pride for the school that you're supposed to represent and lead, my goodness. How about the other end of the coin? Kyle Whittingham, head coach of the Michigan Wolverines. What's your perspective on the matter?
Well, yeah, obviously the extra second was huge. As I watched the first Hail Mary end and the ball sailed out of the back of the end zone, as I glanced at the clock, I was pretty sure there was 1 second left, but that obviously is not up to me. But as the refs went to replay, they confirmed it, and so gave us one more opportunity. And that second time around, Bryce threw a perfect ball because the first one he sailed it out the back, which gives us no chance to catch it. And J.J. made a phenomenal catch. Doesn't surprise me. That's who he is. I see him make contested catches every day in practice. And offensive line gave Bryce enough time to launch it. And so this game will go down in history, Michigan history. I don't know if it's in a positive way, but it'll go down in history for certain.
It'll go down in history. Yeah, Kyle, dude, you're regretting that coming out of retirement. Bryce Underwood stinks. Give me the under all day long this week with Oklahoma in town. Great defense. Underwood can't play. The only fear of losing the under for me this week would be that a backup comes in for Michigan and Oklahoma's not prepared for what they're going to see from him because it's a complete unknown. That is the only fear. Bryce Underwood is maybe some of the worst money that's ever been purchased in the NIL world in today's college football. Now, let's move on from that debacle because I can't even believe the quotes that I'm hearing. They're absolutely insane stuff. Let's go to what went down in Death Valley. As Lane Kiffin officially transferred Dabo Swinney and his era as the head coach Clemson into complete irrelevancy. And I just want to frame this because the final score was 51-10. And they were outgained Clemson by LSU 644-145, 499 more yards, 38 first downs to 8, 290 rush yards to 40. Clemson went 1 of 13 on third down. And I think when we think about Dabo Swinney and his tenure at Clemson, we should start thinking of him as the BlackBerry of college football coaches. He took over in 2008. He won two national titles, 16 and 18, made four title games, six straight college football playoffs, won the ACC nine times, 12 straight 10-win seasons. He's like the BlackBerry. He had his reign in an era where he joined the cell phone likes of the Motorola Razr and the Sidekick, and Nextel had their moment in the sun with the chirpy chirp on the side there. Dabo had his moment where you thought he was king, where he was the best, but every now and then, your product comes along and someone does you better, right? The BlackBerry, when Dabo started at Clemson, he was like the BlackBerry. He was innovative. He had a keyboard, right? He had the ability to get emails, all those things that you looked forward to. But at some point in time, the iPhone was invented and things changed in the landscape. You had to be able to download apps on your phone. You had to be able to watch videos on your phone. There was so much more than just the functionality of the email here. You had to advance as everything around you was moving forward. And Dabo Swinney completely failed to do that. So while he operated successfully for a brief moment in time in the Nick Saban era, where it was so difficult to win any, he got a couple. And you tip your hat. But now things have changed. The sport has advanced, and Dabo Swinney is as irrelevant as the BlackBerry because his inability to use the transfer portal to add talent to his roster is going to be the end of Clemson mattering in college football. They will go back to being a run-of-the-mill ACC team that you never think about. Last one up here for the campus crawl is let's do the tally. Based on the numbers I'm seeing out there, I might be off by one or two. It's a lot of college football games. But coming into today, favorites were 42 and 26 against the spread. Home teams went 42 and 24 against the spread to finish out week one of the college football season. And with SMU pushing, we'll say at -3 because that was the closing number. So that won't add to that tally on either side. Dogs have not been barking. Does that come back the other way in week two? I hope it does. I certainly like to identify dogs here, but I am very concerned that this is just an element of the transfer portal and the NIL that we're going to have to get used to. Is the rich get richer? The teams that need to plug holes that are contenders are able to do so because they have money to spend. Therefore, they hit the ground running right away in week one. Where there were some discrepancies in these numbers in years past, you could take advantage of the element of the unknown. I think the unknown works against you now, potentially in college football. I hope I'm wrong. We'll see more data in week two. I'd like to see more dogs cashing, and we'll look for those dogs throughout the week here on Cashing Out. Hey, do you think you're better than the experts? Now is your chance to prove it. The Edge Boost Average Joe contest puts you in the same pick'em format as the Circa Friday Football Invitational, the one that the pros play. Top Average Joe earns a spot in next year's Circa Invitational field. It's free to play, and you can register anytime during the season. Edge Boost is offering its customers a $1,000 deposit if you finish first for the week. If you don't have an Edge Boost account, don't worry. Sign up, edgeboost.io, with promo code VSIN, and make sure your account is funded with at least $100. Enter the contest today, VSIN.com/Joe.
Welcome back to Cashing Out. You're on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Dustin Sweetelson coming to you from the Circus Sportsbook, downtown Las Vegas. Me here, you there. Thanks for making us a part of your night. However you may be tuning in, SiriusXM Channel 189, YouTube TV, the Visa Watch app, radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. We have breaking news at this hour out of the NFL. Jordan Schultz is reporting the New England Patriots, an all-pro corner. Christian Gonzalez have agreed to a four-year, $135 million dollar extension, $102 million guaranteed per multiple sources. The deal is done. He is the highest paid corner in NFL history, and that is the only thing that New England could do in this scenario. There is no world where they were going to be able to move on from him. Coming off the Super Bowl, losing to Seattle, they needed to lock him back up. They made so many improvements in this roster. It wasn't just that you need the player back. You can't let this hang over the team with so many high expectations for so many guys here. They want to get back there. And this defense is going to have to help lead the charge. Offense improved, right? The addition to A.J. Brown on the outside to go with Romeo Doubs. I love Elijah Vera Tucker at guard. But the reality is this defense and the ability for Christian Gonzalez to take away part of the field as a corner, he's as good of a shutdown guy as you're going to find in today's NFL. They had to have this happen. You couldn't let this linger because it becomes a distraction. And this is a New England team that's dealt with plenty of distractions in the offseason. You're not looking to add one more because at some point with the snowballs, one last snowball can lead to an eventual avalanche with a team like this. I think that this was the only move. We'll do more on that game coming up in our VSiN morning bet segment, as I do have a play. It's not on the side or the total. The first player prop of the season has been bet, and it's in the Patriots and the Seahawks coming up here on Wednesday. But we continue with our series we're doing as we get set for kickoff this week with the Core Four. Just a few more markets we're going to hit here. Every market, four bets looking to be profitable. This is a strategy exercise. So in some of these, I've gone really short. And then with that, to balance it out, I've looked for some big long shots. In this specific market for Coach of the Year, I am going to look at all long shots. I'm trying to hit it big, and I'm not going the traditional route of, well, this is the new coach on the new team. Can they exceed expectations? I think it's bigger than that. But looking at the track record of who's won this award in the past, I think there's context that matters. Mike Vrabel won a season ago. New England won 14 games. Their preseason win total was 8.5. He beat the total by 5.5. That is beating expectations. The year prior, Kevin O'Connell won this award. Sam Darnold was the quarterback. Their preseason win total was 6.5. Actual wins, 14. Beating the total by 7.5. Prior to that, Kevin Stefanski. 9.5 was the win total for the Browns. He won 11 games. Beat it by 1.5. Daboll the year before that. Win total was 7.5 for the Giants. They won 9 games. He beat it by 1.5. So basically what I'm trying to get at here, 6 of the last 15 winners of the Coach of the Year award. Vrabel in 25, Daboll in 22, Stefanski 20, Nagy in 18, McVay in 17, Jim Harbaugh in 2011, Arians as the interim. We are looking at 7 of the 15 were coaches in their first year. So that's 47%. That is a good chunk, but it's not more than half, right? Not more than half here when I list all those names off. That means it doesn't have to be just a guy, new place, new opportunity, trying to exceed expectations. 13 of the 15 winners, they reached at least 11 regular season wins. The average wins among the last 15 was 11.8. One had 15 wins, three had 14 wins, two had 13, three had 12, four had 11, two had 9. The turnaround matters. The expectation matters. But the average preseason win total for these teams was 7.8. So we're looking right around that 8 mark for the most part. The average Coach of the Year team exceeded its preseason expectation by roughly 4.3 wins. 14 of the 10 winners had a preseason win total below 10. I'm going to look in that direction for 2, and then I'm going to look north of that for 2 when we get to the actual plays that we like. But based on everything I just laid out, with the track record of the last 15 winners of this award, the names that make the most sense, and I understand people wanting to back it based on the narrative with that first-time head coach taking over a new program, Kellen Moore makes sense. He's around 14-1. He takes over a Saints team, the win total 7.5. Can they win 9, 10, 11 games? I'm a little skeptical. That's why he's not on my list. John Harbaugh of the Giants, win total 7.5. I think they can win 8. I think there's a chance they win 9. I think 10 is asking way too much. There's a chance he can win this award, but it's 6.5-1, the favorite to win this thing. I'm not touching that. Some other names make sense to me, but a name I've ignored is Jesse Minter, because the new head coach of the Baltimore Ravens takes over a franchise that has expectations to win the Super Bowl. If he doesn't get them to the AFC title game, it will be deemed a disappointment. Year one taking over the Ravens. But maybe I'm underestimating what Jesse Minter brings to the table. We know he's a former defensive mind. We know he's won a, you know, championship at the collegiate level. We know he coached under both Harbaugh brothers, but in terms of leadership, how much is he changing year one with the Ravens from what they experienced under John Harbaugh for over a decade? He explained when he met with the media earlier today.
You know, it's just your own experiences over time and what you think as you're going through it as an assistant. You're making notes of what you like. I love John Harbaugh, and there's a lot of things that he does that we still do. And so there's, you know, I don't really want there to be a misnomer of like, oh, he's changing all this stuff. Like, there's a lot of ways that we operate, I think, and think about the game very similarly. I learned a ton from him working here for 4 years, learned a ton working with his brother. I think they operate maybe differently than people think. And so maybe somewhere in the middle is kind of where we landed from how we go about our business.
You know what? Jesse Minter's 10-1. I might be sleeping on him just because I think it's so hard to take over a team with high expectations and win this award. But based on what I heard there, maybe I'm underestimating what the Ravens can be. Like, I like Cincinnati to win that division. I like Cincinnati to win the AFC. Everything I just heard from Jesse Minter was a guy with no ego. And in terms of leading a locker room, I think you have to have that. So that means he's not demeaning what they've done in the past. He's trying to add and build to it. He's not saying, well, John Harbaugh did it this way and he was wrong. He's saying, you know what? I work for the guy and I learned some things from him. I might be wrong about betting Jesse Minter in this market, but as far as this exercise is concerned, I'm only going long shot. So here are the four bets we're going to use in the core four for Coach of the Year. The first one we're looking at is Kevin Stefanski, 22-1. You guys know I'm not high on Tua Tagovailoa. If we're going to win this thing with Stefanski, it's because he somehow either schemes up Tua, Michael Penix shows up in a few weeks, or I can't believe I'm saying this, Kevin Stefanski wins football games with Cooper Rush. They went 8-9 last year. Could they win 9 games? Could they win 10 games? Would that be enough? Win total 6.5 at one shot, minus 140 to the over. I'm seeing 7.5 out there as well. I think they can exceed expectations. And I think they can win the division because it's so bad. And he's a brilliant play designer. We've seen him do more with less weapons. Like, he had Nick Chubb, he had David Njoku. You swap them out for Bijan Robinson and Kyle Pitts every time. You prefer the Atlanta combination. I think he's a floor raiser, and he does that in Atlanta right away. While I'm not high on them to win the division if Tua plays, if Penix plays, there's a world where it can happen. But if I'm completely wrong about Tua and Stefanski can unlock something here with the weapons they have, and he's already won this award a couple times, I think he'll get a lot of credit for this turnaround. And I think at 22-1, the number is high enough to consider it. He is the first bet in the core four. The next one, and people are going to think I'm crazy, give me Aaron Glenn at 28-1. He is coaching for his job. He is already on the hot seat. The narrative has already been set on Aaron Glenn. It is so negative right now. If he wins football games, he has a huge case to win this award. But how many does he need? Will 8 wins get there? Can he win 9? Might be asking a lot. They went 3-14 a year ago. I'm not willing to be so down on Geno Smith like everyone else. I'm not sure any quarterback would have succeeded with the offensive line for the Raiders last year. He brings in Frank Reich as the offensive coordinator. That is a massive boost for the offense. They have weapons. They have a really good O-line. And the defense added adults in the room. Minkah Fitzpatrick, DeMario Davis. They drafted David Bailey. I would lean over 5.5 wins as well on the Jets. I'm a little bit more bullish on them than most. And if they can get to 7, 8, 9 wins, is there a world where Aaron Glenn wins this award? 28-1 is worth a shot. I'm also going to look at Zach Taylor around the same number at 28-1. I'm all in on the Bengals. Win 13, 14, 15 games, they can win. He can win this award. 2019, John Harbaugh won 14 games. Ron Rivera won 15 games in 2015. Belichick in 07, winning 17 regular season games. They were 6-11 last year. That's a turnaround. Offense is always going to play. The defense has been bolstered on the line. Dexter Lawrence, Jonathan Allen, Boye Mofe. They also drafted Shamar Stewart and Cassius Howell the last 2 years out of A&M. And I think they can win the AFC North. They're the only return. He's the only returning head coach to that division. What if they're the one seed in the AFC? I believe they can be. And I think Taylor can win this award. And lastly, Sean McVay, 40-1. Are they going for history this year? Because if they win 15, 16, 17 games, and I think they want to do that, they want to be the one seed, I absolutely think it's more than just about being a coach who turns a team around. It's about dominance. And if the Rams live up to their potential of being the most dominant team in the league, he can win this award. VSiN.com/guide. Check out the post preseason update on the NFL betting guide. Become a pro for as little as $9.99 in the original betting guide. Will Hill wrote up Sean McVay, 40-1 coach of the year. He agrees with me. Find out why. Go to VSiN.com/guide.
Cashing out here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on Cashing Out, I'm Dustin Sweetelson, broadcasting as always from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. Me here, you there. Thanks for making us a part of your night. However you may be tuning in, SiriusXM Channel 189, YouTube TV, the VSiN Watch app, radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. We had a fun show, man. We went through the end of SMU and Florida State. In case you missed it, the Mustangs get the win on the road in week one, 27-24. They do not cover. We push on 3 if you laid it with SMU. Under the total cashes, 51 points scored. Total closed at 55. Game was delayed. It was weird. It was funky. SMU tried to give it away, and fortunate for them, Florida State wasn't able to capitalize. So we move on to week two in college football. I have a bunch of picks. They're up at VSiN.com/picks. And if you missed any part of the show tonight, you can always go check it out wherever you get your podcast or on the VSiN Watch app. Hour number one, Chris Vanini was tremendous. Senior college football writer from The Athletic. His thoughts on the Michigan, Western Michigan drama on the clock situation in hour number one. Jeff Erickson shared some NFL plays for week one, along with Major League Baseball for Tuesday's card in hour number two. We were also joined by Richie Incognito, former offensive lineman, pro bowler in the league for 14 years. He checked in from Australia ahead of the Rams and the Niners, which we'll discuss here momentarily. And then Eric Lindquist, his best bets in NFL week one and baseball earlier in this hour. You can download all that wherever you get your podcast. With that, it's time to turn our attention to the Tuesday card in Major League Baseball. It's time for the VSiN Morning Bet segment. Now, a few games jumped out to me, but ultimately only one that I've officially pulled the trigger on. As the Arizona Diamondbacks go to Kansas City to take on Michael Wacha and the Kansas City Royals. This is Corbin Burns' first start of the year. Corbin Burns was a guy who a few years ago won a Cy Young Award. Then spent a season in Baltimore where he underwhelmed, then signed a contract with Arizona and got hurt into his first season there in a big deal. Based on what I can see, I think I saw only two innings of rehab work for Corbin Burns in the minors this year. Now he's going to pitch in a real game against a Kansas City offense that has been much improved as the season has gone on. On the other side, you have Michael Wacha at home, a veteran pitcher who I trust a lot in certain situations. Here with Arizona's bullpen just being so bad right now and the Kansas City offense being strong, I'll take that plus 105 with the pitcher I trust more to go deeper into the game and an offense in Kansas City that I trust a lot in this spot at home, specifically at Kauffman Field. Give me Kansas City plus 105 against Arizona on Tuesday in Major League Baseball. I thought that Jeff Erickson, when he joined me on Cashing Out, had some good points about Houston and Philly. He likes the under, and I think that makes sense as well. If you look at this Philadelphia pitching staff, you have Jesus Luzardo pitching like an ace lately. You have Aaron Nola looking like the guy he was a few years ago, contending for Cy Young's. And then more importantly, the kid Andrew Painter, he's coming off a seven-inning shutout at Arizona. He's been really formidable over the last month and a half here, pitching to a 3.26 ERA. He's got 28 strikeouts and 30 and a third innings. I think he's absolutely capable of limiting this Houston offense at home. On the other side, Hayden Wesneski, also a hot pitcher lately. He's plus 124. I lean under the 8.5 in that game, but not enough to actually pull the trigger and bet it. We have a couple of NFL games going to go down this week. Wednesday it begins with the Seahawks taking on the New England Patriots. It's a rematch of the Super Bowl from a year ago. What's crazy about this one is you have narrative that you can build on either side. On one side, you have New England looking for revenge. On the other side, you have Seattle saying, we just won a Super Bowl and nobody's talking about us repeating. Everyone's just talking about every other team making a case to do something this season. Why not us? Why can't we do it again? Seattle's laying 3.5. Total in this one is 44 and a hook. Some updated news. One, Christian Gonzalez has signed a contract with the New England Patriots, an extension that makes him the highest paid corner in NFL history. That's a distraction that is gone for them. There is another distraction, though, and that's the running back situation. Travion Henderson has not been downgraded yet for this game with an ankle, but he hasn't practiced since August 24th. We're already, you know, September 7th at this point. We don't know if Travion Henderson's going to play. Some other reports based on injuries, we know that Zach Charbonnet is not going to give it a go most likely for Seattle, even though Mike McDonald says he's on an aggressive timetable and should be back sooner than expected. But it sounds like Nick Amanwori, the safety, awesome out of South Carolina in his rookie year last year, I don't know if he's going to play. Ernest Jones, their linebacker, had some comments talking about that they would kind of do the best with whoever was available. That felt like it was linking towards Amanwori, who's doubtful to suit up. Also, Seahawks safety Ty Okada has a hamstring. He didn't practice on Sunday. He may not be available as well. Coming into this matchup, Seattle's 5-1 against the spread since 2007, over 6-1 in the last seven matchups between these two teams. Seattle's 3-0 against the spread at home against New England, going back to 07 as well. Mike Vrabel, 13-7 covering, 12-9 to the over. Overall with New England, he's 7-2 against the spread on the road, 4-0 against the spread, 3-1 to the over as a road dog. Mike McDonald, 21-14 against the spread, 20-17 to the over overall as the head coach of the Seahawks, 8-10 covering, 11-8 to the over, 6-9 against the spread, 9-1 to the over as a home favorite of 7 or less. I lean over in this game. I think that New England's offense is a lot better. There's issues with the injuries on the back end of that Seattle defense that I'd be concerned about. And I think Seattle can still move the ball and score plenty against the Patriots. So I lean over in the game. But my official play and the first player prop of the year that I bet, Ramondre Stevenson, over 23.5 receiving yards. Seattle last year allowed the sixth most receiving yards to running backs. He had 40 receiving yards in the Super Bowl against this team. We don't know if Travion Henderson's going to play, and if he does, will he be in there on third down? Plus, I like to correlate these things. Passing props with the underdog. New England's the underdog, throwing from behind. There's a matchup that can be exploited for them in the passing game. Give me over 23.5 receiving yards for Ramondre Stevenson. Now, the game on Thursday in Australia, it's the Niners and the Rams. Los Angeles laying 3.5. Total is 48.5. Kyle Shanahan met with the media and said he's trying to figure out what day of the week it is.
We did our totally normal routine. I'm not sure because we're, like I said, we're a little confused with when I look at my clock and it says the time, and then I try to see my family's time and it says the time, but it says yesterday. I don't even get how that's possible. So I feel like I'm in the future. And then also when we play on our Friday, which I think is a Thursday in the U.S., we're such creatures of habit. So I call today Tuesday. I call today Wednesday, which is the first day we put in a game plan. But I think it's Monday. However, though, it's Sunday in the present. So, like, I'm going to mess that up all week if you guys ask me.
Yeah, I get it, dude. I'd be in the same boat. Unfortunately, you're the head coach of the team, and I bet plus 3.5 with the Niners earlier today. News coming out about this matchup. Aaron Donald not on the field portion of practice, open to reporters earlier on Monday. That via Gary Klein of the LA Times. Adam Schefter went on the Pat McAfee show, said he doesn't expect a suspension for Puka Nacua, so he should be able to give it a go for week one. Also saw a report on Sunday from Nate Atkins of The Athletic that Myles Garrett and Aaron Donald were practicing on Sunday for the Rams. On the other side, Mike Evans says all the injuries he dealt with in camp were not significant, and if it was a game week, he wouldn't have missed any time during the preseason. George Kittle was asked if he's playing in week one against the Rams. He said, quote, "I'm trending in the right direction. It's going to be close to a game time decision." And then Christian McCaffrey commenting on the flight to Australia, quote, "The jet lag didn't hit me that bad. It's more about how long you're on the plane." So Christian McCaffrey feeling okay right now. I am on the Rams plus three, the Niners plus three. The Rams are 4-3 against the spread against San Francisco going back to 2022. The over 6-2 in their meeting since 2022. Kyle Shanahan, 31-29 against the spread, 33-26 to the under as an underdog. Sean McVay is 4-1 against the spread, 5-0 to the under on a neutral field. But part of the reason why I'm on Shanahan and company, week one divisional dogs, 74-53-2 against the spread since 2023. That's 58%. Give me that divisional dog on a neutral field. I think too much is being made of San Francisco and all the injuries. I think they're going to look very solid here because they have to capitalize on this window, and it's closing on Shanahan and company, at least in this version of the roster, and there's a lot on the line for them. I think they come out, they keep this close. He always plays McVay really close, so I like the Niners in this spot. And then a couple other player props that I added early in the week. Give me Kate Otten of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, over 28.5 receiving yards against the Bengals. So Cincinnati allowed the most receiving yards to tight ends last year, the third most in 24, and the second most in 2023. No more Mike Evans. Baker Mayfield trusts him. They're also the underdog on the road at Cincinnati. I think they're throwing from behind. Otten over 28.5 receiving yards. And then finally, I went over 66.5 rush yards for Omarion Hampton of the Chargers. And facing an Arizona team that allowed the fourth most rushing yards to running backs a season ago, Chargers laying 10. O-line is back, even though they lost their center. Mike McDaniel's system, Devon Achane ran for 90-plus against the same defense last year. I love Hampton. Over rushing yards there. Stay with VSiN all day long. It gets started at 7 a.m. Eastern with VSiN by the books. Then it's a numbers game at 10 a.m. Eastern, followed by prop points at 1 p.m. Eastern time. I'll see you next time on Cash.